Good afternoon. This is Julian Valdivia with the Sam Proctor Oral History Program. I'm here in the Roberto Clemente Park at the Lee County Black History Society with
Nina Denson Rogers.
All right. And we are going to be talking about the history of the Dunbar community here in Fort Myers. Nina, could you please spell your first name?
N-I-N-A. Everyone says Nina, but I'm Nina. That's what my parents call me. Nina Denson,
right.
D-E-N-S-O-N hyphen Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S.
Alrighty. And where were you born?
I was born in DeLand, Florida, way back in March 8th, 1941. But I came to Fort Myers ever since the 1965. So I've been here. I was not born and raised in Fort Myers, Florida, or Lee County, but I am from Florida.
Okay. And what coast is that on?
The East Coast.
Okay, it's on the East Coast. Do you remember, were you born in a hospital or at home?
Home.
Home? Okay, and was there a midwife?
Midwife. Mm-hmm.
Do you know who the midwife was?
Most of those people are doing my sisters and brothers, most of them were midwife. I remember them saying her name many, many times about when she, before she started, she had to have a Coca-Cola and a BC. I guess that calmed the nerve. Mrs. It might come back to me before then. Right now, I can't get it out. I've forgotten what they told me her name was, yeah.
That's fine. There's no reason to stress over it. Who were your parents?
My father is Thomas Edward Wynn, and my mother's name was Bertha. Her maiden name was Carter, but when she got married to my dad, she became Bertha Wynn.
Okay, and Wynn was spelled W-I-N?
W-I-N-N, just like Winn-Dixie.
Oh, okay. And who were your siblings?
I have three brothers. My older one next to me is Thomas Wynn Jr.
Okay.
The next one is Roosevelt Wynn. And the baby boy in the family would be Cleveland Wynn. And I have two sisters. It was six of us in all. My sister that's next to me, her name was Betty Wynn. And the baby of the family of all of the children was Gloria Wynn.
All right. All right, and oh, wait, also I want to ask, too, do you remember your grandparents?
Yes,
okay.
I do remember my grandmother, because she was with us for a good long while. Her name was Bertha Carter, and that's what my mother was named after. And her husband was named Ace Carter, but he died before I was born, but I don't remember him. I guess when I was 1 or 2 years old, he must have passed away, so I never got to talk to him like I do my grandmother, who was around us until she was 92 years old, and that's when she passed.
Oh, wow.
She lived in Naples, Florida.
Naples?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Honor, so one or two that was down there, but she came to live. But she was in DeLand, Florida also. She had a home there before it burned down, and then she came to stay with other her daughter in Naples, Florida, which was Ruby Rim.
Mm. Ruby Rim.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, because your grandparents were from DeLand, was like the family historically in Florida?
Most of them lived in Florida. Now, whether all of them were born and raised there, don't remember all of that, but most of them on my grandmother's side lived in DeLand, Florida. Yeah, I had one or two aunts there, great aunts, and my grandmother, and I had an uncle, one uncle that lived there. If it wasn't DeLand, it was DeLeon Springs, and that was real close, about 2 or 3 miles, like it would be, Lehigh or some of the places around here, but most of them on her side. My daddy's side, now, I do know they came from Georgia and Alabama. my daddy's folks, and I was not around them that much because we were in Florida.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you said you moved to Fort Myers in 1965.
65. Mm-hmm.
How old were you then?
I was about 20-something. I was a grown lady. I was taught, that's my first year teaching school. I taught school for 30 years, and Dunbar Elementary School was my first year. So it was about my 20s, 23, 24, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I read about this in some of the older documents. Was it true? A lot of people actually migrated into Lee County because of the educational opportunities that there were for African Americans.
At that time, I just knew that I had relatives here. I didn't, know all about that good part of it, but it might be so, but I wouldn't know that history of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just didn't know the span of things because Dunbar was actually the first African-American high school in Southwest Florida.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a place that everyone kind of just centered.
Yeah, that was the school was built in the summer of 26, and of course the school children went in 1927. But yeah, that was the thing. Students from Charlotte County, Collier County, and other surrounding counties came to Dunbar. That was way back in 1927. I think their first graduation was two people, and that was 1929. And from then, the school just took off.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was not down here then, not until 65.
Okay. So, well, I mean, 1965, you came at a pretty tumultuous time. Do you remember anything going on in, like, the realm of civil rights in the city?
In the 60s, well, I had, when we came down here, I heard one or two people saying that the NAACP at that time, Mr. Edwards, it was a Reverend Edwards who used to be the president, and it was some troubling times there. They wanted to go and march for civil rights down to the town part, but then they said the sheriff at that time, Mr. Snag Thompson, took him to the side and told him, do you see those people over there? What you have faced in you all? And they had baseball bats and things that they were going to attack the blacks with if they came down marching. So he went back and told the group that was marching that no, it would not be very peaceful. Things like that was happening here. Fort Myers, when I came, everything was kind of peaceful. Integration was not here yet. Segregation was still, because I had to go to doctor's office and sit in different rooms, whites on this side or blacks on here, and had different restaurants. My husband used to always talk about Snack House downtown, and he always just, because he was a person who just liked to get into things, not into trouble so much as going to jail, but he liked to upset people by doing just the opposite of what they said. Say, you come through this door and not this door. He would come through the door. They told him nothing. So at Snack House, don't let me get the man's name mixed up with it. At Snack House, he would go, and then they would tell him, Mr. Rogers, you know, because he would always go down there for breakfast or coffee. He liked coffee, even if it was nothing but coffee. But he would go, and he'd do the person very well who ran it. And so he would do things just to have conversation, people talking about you in the wrong door or something like that. But he would do it for buses and things like that, sit where he was not supposed to sit. But we had things like that going on here. But lynching, though, that happened 2 days of May 24 and 25 of 1924.
Yep.
That was about the only thing that I kind of heard people talk about, and they didn't like talking about it because it was very, very sad to them. But one of the ladies who used to go to my church, she passed, and she was telling me the little history that I do know about RJ, because he went to church with them. They were teenagers at the time, this person who was telling me about that incident. But other than that, Fort Myers is kind of peaceful for me as a teacher. Just taught at school and did what I had to do, and that was it. I didn't have any troubles that I can think of, unless if you ask something, and maybe it'll jog my memory about things like that.
All right. Well, you said people didn't like talking about the lynchings because it was sad. Mm-hmm. Was there any kind of conversation within the community about the lynchings?
Not a hope. You'd have to bring that up. And like I said, yeah. I went definitely to Mrs. Mary Ware Child. That was the lady who told me about it. And she was saying, oh, I don't like to talk about it. But then I had gotten this newspaper clipping when I was working here with the society, and then that's what sort of, I said, I got to go and ask what's the name, because in the clipping they do not mention their names. They said two bubbles, B-U-B-B-A something, how they spell the people, the boy's name, but they didn't mention the name, saying they were killed because they had raped two girls that seemed to be not correct, but that was the big thing. People came as far as Arcadia, they said, over here to get rid of those two boys for raping those girls. But they seemed to be neighbors, those people during that time. They were neighbors, and I don't know what gave them the idea to go skinny dipping in a ditch that was here.
Yeah.
But they went, and that was the big thing. When whites saw this, that was never a right thing to do for those two boys. So the death came very, very quickly. RJ was the one, I think, died first, because the Wilson boy, someone hit him on a train, and the conductor saw him and told the people about it, and that's how he got killed also. Yeah, she never did want to talk about that, because I guess that is, when you think about it, people dragging a teenage person down the road so all his skin and flesh is coming off. And if it's true, like I said, I was not here. All I know that she told me this part, that one of the boys, I think it was RJ, was castrated and hung on a tree down where, I think the Stars Complex or one of these centers, recreation centers, had a tree there. And the other boy, they took him and hung him on the porch of a store at that time, and talked to the parents when they were dragging the people by. They told them, somebody here's meat, dead meat, or some kind of stuff like that. But it was, I would imagine that would be very, very painful to talk about, and especially if you knew and these people would have known them, because they were here during that time. But
they were classmates.
And
who was that woman's name, or what was that woman's name, the woman that you talked to about it?
Mary Childs.
All right.
Her maiden name was, well, one of the name, maybe she was married, but her reason I knew as Mary Ware, and she later married a child. So her name is Mary Ware, W-A-R-E Childs, C-H-I-L-D-S. And she was a member of Mount Olive AME Church.
Okay. And Mount Olive, I'm assuming that's where you pray.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Wow. Okay. Well, that lines up. That's interesting, because that story actually lines up with a lot of the accounts of the ones in, you know, the old oral history thing that I told you.
That you read about.
Yep.
Yeah, so. And I wish those people that you read about, like Jacob Johnson, I think he said he knew the boys too. He was one that I got a little information, but he was not as old as the teenage boys then. He was kind of like, when they were teenagers, like 14 or whatever, he was only like 6 or 7, because he said one of the boys, and I think it was the Wilson boy, rode him on his bicycle when he was going to school or something, and he really remembered that person, but didn't know as much as Mary Well did. But yeah, I would think people would remember that. And I could say someone was at church a few days ago was asking me about that, and I was wondering, how did he know about that? He's a quite young person, and he was saying something about they're doing something in either Alabama or Mississippi with a wall of people who got lynched. Mm. So he was asking me a little bit, and I gave him about as much because I don't know. I knew that RJ's family, his mother had passed, and I think the father was there, but the older sister helped raise the children, and it was like three or four of them plus the oldest person who's doing the raising and RJ. So that, but Wilson, I don't know anything about him that much, his family.
Yeah, all I read about with them was they just gave like a physical description of them. They didn't really talk about their family
or anything like that.
Which it's a shame that we don't have that either.
And we don't even know too where those two boys were buried or if they got to be, because at that time there's two cemeteries here on Henderson. As you go down, there's Oak Ridge and there's Woodlawn Cemetery. So they would have, if they buried them in those, they would be there. If not, if they didn't bury them, I don't know what happened to the body.
Those two cemeteries, did you say Oak Ridge and Woodlawn? Mm-hmm. Those were the colored cemeteries.
A long time ago then. And of course, that's probably who's in there. Nobody but blacks are in there. And of course, now they're integrated cemeteries and they go to other places. But yeah, those are two black cemeteries that, and they're right here on the Henderson.
Okay. Since you came, I'm going to go back, you came in 1965, and this is after the passage of the Civil Rights Act in 1964. Mm-hmm. So was there any kind of commotion about that things were still segregated in Fort Myers?
Before I came, they were talking about, one family, the Blaylock family. It's a lawsuit. It's the Blaylock versus, Lee County lawsuit here, that because the oldest child wanted to go to Fort Myers High School, and of course she couldn't, and so that's when that came up. But I was not here when that started. Mm-hmm. That started way, it started I think in the 60s, but I came 65, so that was all settled and about them and the school, though, when I came. It was not until 69, 70 school year that Dunbar Elementary was integrated, because that's the years that I went from Dunbar Elementary over to J. Colin School. And it was peaceful, but when they first started, the children were going to different schools when they said, that this is all schools in Lee County are integrated and this school would be that. And with the black schools, was one or two of them, they took them for some other things. Riding the buses was kind of messy. I think there was a little arguments or things there, but like I said, I don't know that much about them. I heard people talk about them, and one or two that's on your list if they check them off, because if you want any information about that, one or two of those are older people now, but they were children when they went to school. But that list that I saw, Mrs. Myers had some names of those students who went, and they could tell you whether it was any, what was happening. I don't think it was all that terrible, but it wasn't all that peaceful either, because parents didn't want to send their children over to black schools, and the blacks knew that they're going to have to get up really early to get on buses that was coming over to take children out of the black neighborhood. So there you have it there. But like I said, there wasn't any lynching or anything like that during that time.
Yeah.
Like it was in the 20s and all of that. But they got through it.
But there were still clear lines, like the railroad tracks and...
Yeah, the railroad tracks is where all the blacks way, way back there would be living. And in those days that they couldn't go down, or they would be a policeman or someone asking them, you know, why are you here? Jacob Johnson, the person who is dead, used to tell me that, because he had a job at one of the restaurants and he had to come. It was daylight when he was going, but when it came back, it was dark, and he was always met with the same message. Why are you, you know, over here? Or why are you, you know, in this section or something like that? But sure, those things were there. And of course, you couldn't go here, you couldn't do this, and you couldn't do that. Schooling was over here, and whites were not, teachers were not supposed to come over here and teach. Blacks were not, until they got the desegregation all straightened out. So those things did happen. We know that.
So while you were teaching elementary school students, I know a lot of the materials that teachers would receive to teach their students were secondhand from the white schools. Was that the case in the elementary schools?
It was the case when them before all of that. Like I said, when we, in 1965, when I came, we were still at Dunbar. It was a black school up until 69-70 school year. Teachers knew things like that. You got the old books and all that. But most of the teachers then, we bought our own supplies. If we needed books, not the textbooks so much, and bought them, that was things that would be there. But if we needed papers for kids or pencils and all, that came out of our own pockets.
Wow.
We, and there are teachers today still doing that, because teachers are not paid like doctors and lawyers and all of the different people make all of that money, but they don't have to do like we did. When I first started, we had 45 children, and that's a no-no today too. But if you wanted your kids to succeed and you want them to do things, you would do go and get. And that's why a lot of people say, don't give it to those teachers, because they're going to hold on to it. We did. If we had things that we didn't use for this year, we kind of kept them for the next year and the next year to come, because we know it's going to be kind of hard to get by. Or you got to go and take your money and get some of those supplies for the kids.
So in terms of like supplies and things like that, was there any financial support from the black community in Dunbar, or was it was all just you guys?
Well, the teachers in the 60s, we didn't ask too much of that, because like I say, we did have the hand-me-down things that passed from mother. But during these years, when when I came down, because it was still segregated things, but we knew what had happened, and if we want to bypass all of those things like that, we just tried to get some good stuff, you know, that we could use with the kids. But later, when it was integration, then that's different, you know, because then we had things that black children had things like the whites had, because they were going to the same schools then. But the first four or five years, that's what I did. I just tried to get things that we thought would be helpful, and that's what black teachers did at that time.
Trying to help your students succeed.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, now I wanted to ask, I know, and I only heard about this from man, I don't remember whether Jared and I were looking at like newspaper clippings and things like that. I know I heard it from Coot Farrell or Teresa Watkins Brown. In 1971, I think, when they finally integrated all the schools in Lee County, there was like a disturbance at one of the schools, or like a riot or something like that.
That was at Fort Myers High School, and that's the school that the young lady, the family, they was suing Lee County to get their children over there. I think it was something like I said, the people who were involved with that would be some of those students on that list that you definitely would ask. And I could, when I see the list, I'll go down and see if they're checked off for you to interview. But they would tell you, because at the Fort Myers High School, I think it was something like little rioting or something like that. Like I said, I don't think anything was that terrible. At least I didn't hear it that much, but it was some, it was not very quiet. This did not go off peacefully. Like I said, you had people hollering and screaming, I'm not sending my kids over there and blah, blah, blah. So
do you know whether, cause I don't know how like reported on the event was, do you know whether like the agitators were students in the school or whether it was like more the parents?
Probably the more the students that was in the school there. I don't, you had more parents on the outside saying they're not sending their children. Well, I know that was parents, but when the things start happening inside the school, that would be definitely the children. But I don't know. Someone have to bring me up to speed and say, yeah, I heard that too, but I don't know the specifics of it because I wasn't here. Mm-hmm. Wasn't, like I said, wasn't born and raised here to know what happened. And and this was like them going over in the years of, someone told me one, because I was the first child to go to Fort Myers Senior High, and I don't remember. I think because it looked like they went over before the 70s, like 69, 70, that was definite. All of these schools are, you know, closed, you know, black schools got nailed going. But they went over like a year or so before that. But I'm not sure again because I hadn't heard, I hadn't thought about this in a long time. But there's newspaper, probably some Philippians in the black history about when and where, but one or two students did say that they were the first one who went to this school, first one who went to that school, and I don't know too many of them, but I do know Fort Myers High School was the one that many people, because at that time, I guess that was the largest probably high school or school that many, if you were high school, you want to go there. If it was elementary, you want to go to another different school that was in the city, but I don't remember what they said about the, I think elementary children were peaceful about what they did. I think it was high school. If anything gonna travel, it's gonna be there. Over there. Yeah, yeah.
I should ask too, so did you,
now Teresa might have been one of those, well, I'm not sure, was she one of those first ones?
I think she went to Cyprus.
Well, she would be, she came a little later on because there's some, yeah, she's not quite as old as that. I do know a young lady who's maybe in her late 60s or something. There would be those type people who went, or 60s or 70s.
Yeah. I should ask too, did you teach all your life?
All 30 of them.
Oh, wow.
Right here in this Lee County. Started out at Dunbar. When we say Dunbar High School, many people say, well, you were in elementary. Dunbar High School, and when they close and all, it like came Dunbar Elementary. But you were at Dunbar, which is still there. It's a Dunbar Community School. You were at, now we always say, start out at Dunbar High School. That building is the same as when I started. So we always say Dunbar High School, but we, you know, we named it, this is Dunbar Elementary for the years 65, whatever. But that same school was three or four different things when they closed it. It was once a middle school. There was this and a that. So the school is there, and it's on the that register, the register where you write your name down with the National Historical Register. It is one of the schools there.
Wow. Okay, and then I just wanted to ask one more thing about, like, education in Southwest Florida at the time. When they started integrating the schools, like, what was, like, the talk of the teachers at the time? Like, how did you talk with, like, your peers about it and maybe, like, the administration and things?
We just did what we were supposed to do. We had to go over, but it was a... For where I went J. Cola, it was all peaceful and nice. The kids, in working with the blacks and the whites, they seem to have gotten along pretty good. Something just came up, but it just went right out. I was just fixing to say something was, I can't reach it. But it was something that I was fixing to say that I knew when we were getting to go over with, we had one principal, and then she left, and another principal came in because they were telling us that the schools were being integrated and all of that, and we had the children line up to go to recess or whatever. But things were nice, but we knew after the year there, we were going to be transferred over. But one, and some of the teachers, like the pupils, for some reason, they went over a year before. Like I went, if I can remember that date, it's 69. I think it was 69. But some teachers and students, I think they went a year before that, and that might have been 1968. So I guess they were trying to break things in, but it was, we taught just like anything else, and we tried to teach the kids like we teach any of them. It was kind of peaceful for me. Sometimes we all compared one group of kids to another group, and doing that, we talked to each other about it, but I guess on the whole, most of the teachers would have been very, very glad to accept it, except that when you do integration, then you lose all of your black cultural things that you do, like the kids had a black band, or the kids had a black cheerleader, the kids had this in school and that. You lose that because you're going to, and now they become a minority in another school, but things are better when you're talking about books and material to use with the kids, they are better. Mm-hmm. But in some instances, you lose something that you've always had. When they talk about the black band was very, very good, and they marched in the Edison pageant parade and all that. But a lot of things was kind of messy too, because when they marched, they would always have to be in the back of the parade, and horses, if horses was here, horses' manure was all there, and they'd have to be stepping around or in it and those things. So it was kind of like messy for the kids to be in black schools, but better to be educated with the right materials and things, but then you're losing out some of the things that you already had before the integration occurred that way.
Yeah, I understand that. That's a similar case with a lot of the, before this I was doing research in Alachua County for another project, and it was a similar, I guess you could say, feeling with the loss of that kind of cultural center. Okay, now I want to ask, because you were also there at the time, and this is more something that's come out of a recent thing because of all of the strain over the statue in downtown Fort Myers with Robert E. Lee. The United Daughters of the Confederacy, I think, put that statue up in 66. Was there ever, I guess you could say, a commotion about them putting that statue up when it first went up?
It was probably already there. Did they say 66?
I think it was 66.
If it was in 66, that was peaceful. Nobody hollered. And in the 60s, if you hollered, what are you hollering about? Nobody's going to take you for what you were hollering about. Today, Mr. Milwaukee and those are going down. They are kind of listening. Now, whether those statues will be removed, that's one statue of the bus, or pictures from the lead, the commissioner room, or something. I don't know. At that time, if you did, as a teacher or a person in the community, was hollering, well, what you putting that there? Who's going to say? We had no say-so that much in the 60s. Today, it has gotten so you can talk, but your talk may not get any place. The thing is, when I look at it as a black, I look at it, and I saw the news the other day when one lady was fussing with Milwaukee and another man was fussing with another lady, and they were talking about this, and the lady said something, I can't even remember the words, but when I heard it, I kept saying, oh, you're so wrong on that. He was telling that it's symbolic. The person's stature or flag or whatever when you're thought first. It's, we know it as what it symbolized long time ago. Mm. We, the Confederates, did not want, whether we had military people over there or not. Union soldiers, we had the some blacks with the Union thing. But it was not fair when you talk about Confederate officers, the people, the flag, the Ku Klux Klan, whatever those things are, that just symbolize hatred to us. And when people start saying, you all don't know what you're talking about, I don't know where they were, but as a youngster coming up, my mother and father would know about all the things, but we did see things like that. So, I just think if anyone asks me about the opinion of the state, I said it's a bus, and we know that he was a general or whatever in the Army, and probably one of the best. We hear reports about a good military person. But the thing is, it should not be there because to us, Lee, the man itself, just represents something that was not good for us. And that's why the NAACP says, move it, put it in a museum, put it somewhere else, but not put it up where everybody is idolizing. And I think that's when the Daughters of American Revolution people put it up, because at that time, nobody's going to holler and question of they're putting Mr. Lee up.
Yeah.
But he's up. And now whether he's coming down, don't know. But in some cities or states, they have done and put it in other places. But yes, people try to have, I guess they get their minds all blank and stuff, and they say, well, what are they fussing and arguing for? Well, if it happened to them, I'd say, like the people, that letter that the man had in the newspaper of his mother, wrote the daddy, and she was going off to camp to, they was gonna gas her and she's gonna die. What do those people say about the Holocaust if they are talking? And then if probably they saw a general or somebody that they recognize a bus somewhere, they would not want that up either. So I don't know. It's kind of messy, but it's like I say, in the 60s, no, 66 or 67, nobody's going to be hollering. If it was, it might have been some of the NAACP. They'd be talking among themselves, but not to the people like Mr. Milwaukee's and the NAACP is doing today.
Mm. Now, actually, that's a really good transition to the next set of questions, because you were talking about not really having a voice. I want to talk a little bit about Veronica Shoemaker, and I want to know if...
That was the voice.
Mm, I want to know if you knew her personally or had
I
any
sure
stories.
Did. She was a member of our church.
Mm.
Yep. The lady, to me, was a courageous person. Because I would not have run 14 or 15 years, because nobody can get those numbers, but it's in that range. It's not too far off. Would not have run that many times to be elected, but she was a woman who was born and raised here, committed to things being better for blacks, so she did it. Mm-hmm. So she was somebody that I'd say today, I said, oh, I heard people saying that they're going to build some houses up here. The street that her name, Veronica Shoemaker, that boulevard up there, they were talking about doing some houses. She told us, a group of people once, that, and we went down a lot of places, went down to meeting. They asked us, well, what would you like to see up in, you know, the black community? There were no filling stations, gas stations, no pharmacies, no food, grocery stores. Those were things we were putting down. Now people are going to put some houses up there, and I heard somebody saying there's going to be some condominiums somewhere up on that street. Not all of it. But she would have been a person just like probably Milwaukee, fussing and arguing down at the city, the council, and talking about, we need this instead of these things like that. But she was a lady who really fought and really, she did a lot for the black community, or in any community. Her daddy was a preacher, and there was 13 or 14 children, a big family of them, and they were all people who like to help out and things like that. And they're all great people who like to talk. I know one of the teachers that worked during my time, her sister, Veronica's sister's name, her name is Daisy Benjamin, and I think she's one of those people on that list to talk to you too. They're all people who I always say, Daisy, you all can talk up something. I say, I cannot do that. I say, I don't like people to tell me, come up and tell me about this. I would love for people to give me that question and so I can think about them, and then it comes to me. But she and her brothers and sisters, they are, and I guess by having a minister in the family or something, they got some of that from their father, but I don't know, but they are very good talkers. And Mrs. Shoemaker, she could talk. She can move people with her talk, and so she did do a lot of nice things for the community.
So then when you were voting too, I imagine she was one of the first people that you voted for, and when you came to Fort Myers.
Yes, oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you remember any other big political or black political leaders at the time? I know there was a doctor that also, I think, ran after her or during the same time as her?
Doctor, let's see, what do you have his name down? Because I can't say. Well, there are people who came after, and of course, I was always sad. I'm saying, oh, they're going to not. She was getting up in age, and I guess it was time for her to come. After about 2 or 3 years after she did not win anyone, she was having trouble with dementia. So, but the thing is, I didn't want her to get out because I just felt she should stay there. She had come this far, so just let her stay. But she did. But there were some other people who wanted the position, but I can't remember who the doctor. A doctor.
I'm trying to remember because there was Veronica Shoemaker. And then, I can't remember.
There are others I know that it's come, but yeah, like that. But I just, at the moment, I can't remember. But there were other successful people here, like the Ella Piper, Dr. Ella Piper. I don't think she ran for anything like she did in the council, but she did a lot to help the community out. They got the Dr. Ella Piper Center still running today. She left her home when she died for it to be for the elderly people and children, but it's mostly for elderly people, and she did a lot. She was a person who ran businesses. She ran a beauty parlor, and that beauty parlor was only for white people with hair because she knew that's where the money would come from. But other things, she helped blacks out to help them go to school. Tuskegee's Jacob told me that she helped his brother to go to school with some funds and things. So she was a lady who was here and did nice things to help out in the black community, which we have others, but there many times I can't think of any other people but 4 or 5. I always think about the black Nelson Tillis who first came here, and I kept saying, I wonder how that was. He had about 11 children, 10 of them lived, one died at his birth. And there's the lady who started the Easter parade, the Mrs. Evelyn Sands Kennedy. She was a teacher, and she was one of these who always wanted her children to succeed. The Easter parade is not like it was when she was there. She had bands galore and children's bicycles all decorated and stuff. But when I came, she was still work teaching at the school that I first started, Dunbar Elementary. And we helped her with floats and stuff to decorate them, or she'd get candy to throw out for the kids and different things. And children, she wanted the children to really be in those parades and stuff. Now they're a little different. But those are some of the people. But at the moment, I can't think of who that doctor was. Because, yeah, a lot of people have ran that want to run against her and all of that. But she was something else, Mrs. Shoemaker.
Yeah. No, the way I read about her, it very much so seems that she was, like, probably one of the most important leaders that Fort Myers has ever had.
Yeah, I think, and probably ever Yeah, I don't think anybody else is, you know, it looked like always, they always said, there was a Dr. King, and I don't think there's ever going to be another Dr. King. You know, you always have somebody that really did something great that you always look, and then maybe some other people come up.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully soon.
Yeah, we need got them. That. We need them, don't we? Yes, we do.
All right. Well, that... Well, I kind of have like two other sets of questions I wanted to ask about. And the other one was more about like recreation here in Fort Myers.
Yeah.
This kind of has to go away from like the educational stuff and everything. But I wanted to ask, well, actually I should ask first more about your family. Were you married when you came here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and who was your husband?
Well, my first husband was Denson. That's why I go with Nina Denson Rogers, because I have one son, and he has sickle cell. But I always wanted my name to be there, because it's Nina Denson. Then he'd come and say, I'm Lester Denson. And they would say, well, how's her name Rogers? So I didn't want to cut that out. But yeah, but I got divorced from him, and later on, I married my second husband, which is Rogers.
Okay, but you were married to Denson when
I came, my name was Denson, and most of the teachers, I mean children, and I say, oh, that must be one of those children that I had. They say, hey, Miss Denson, Miss Denson, and I'll be saying, hey, I don't even know, can't remember you, but my name was Denson, but we were getting divorced doing when I came.
Okay.
But I was Nina Denson, and that's all I used for but 30 years. 30 years after I started retiring, I married the man I knew all the time since I've been here, which was Johnny Rogers.
Mm. And you only had the one son?
One son. But I helped raise I have a dead sister that got killed in... Oh, boy, she was only 22 when she got killed, and so my mother and I, we kind of like, kind of was custodian of the kids, and when my mother passed, they were left with me, and so it was four of them, and all my son and my three sisters' kids.
Okay. Now I want to ask, in terms of like recreation with what you and your family did you or any of your family ever visit Bunch Beach?
Yes, but when I first came, that was about it too. My husband, it wasn't my husband then, but yeah. It was a person that I knew. He took the whole group of us down at Bunch Beach, and things were nice. He even took us to Sanibel with the shells and stuff, and the children started picking up, and we tried naming, you know, getting books and talking about what this is called. But those were some of the things too that was for me, beach like that, going with the kids and things like that, or movies and stuff. It wasn't too much other recreation that I did. Now my sister, if she was living, she would be at all the football games, the basketball, all this. She was athletic and stuff like that, but I wasn't too much of that. But recreation for blacks wasn't too much, but people who like to go and party at bars and things, that was a no-no for me, so I didn't go to there. But we had on Anderson Avenue, as it was called then, when we came in the 60s, 65, it was Anderson Avenue. Of course, it's Dr. Martin Luther King. We had one or two things, bars and things that people would go to and things like that. And going mad. And of course, all up at Anderson at that time was black, like grocery stores, things that blacks owned. They were things that you could go to, and like you say, you weren't leaving, going over the railroad tracks, just right here in your neighborhood. But after the road had to be, a lot of those buildings and things came down, and some of them were just plain going out of business before we start widening it and getting it to be called Dr. Martin Luther King Boulevard.
Mm. Now, I actually want to ask, with black businesses and things like that, when did the decline start in terms of business in the area? Because it kind of seems like black business was like,
it was there. It was there all through the time. But like, yeah. I said, many of the things have gotten torn down when that road was there. But I think it was up and up all those 60s that I was here, 70s. If it was going to decline, it would probably be 90s, and the 90s going down, or the late 80s And but the beginning of the 90s kind of like going down because you could go, you know, to other places and not have any trouble going in to get a dress or shoes or whatever. But we did have business. There was the Style and Men's store down there, grocery store, before I ever came, the grocery store and all. The, what is it, McCutcheon Hall, that big place was built in the 30s, 1938, and they had a dance floor up on the top where the people were singing and dancing up there, and down at the bottom they had the grocery store, the wine place and all. So it was, the place was full with big businesses and things like that for people to go to. Didn't have a grocery, well, they had little things that you could go and buy things like that, because I don't remember going out. I always was a Winn-Dixie person when I came. So Winn-Dixie, I overcrossed and I would go. But they did have little grocery stores and things like that, but I didn't go to too many of those. They had pool halls where people could go for recreation. I do remember trying to see some of the names of the thing. Oh, it was a record store on the end there, Carter's Record Store. Different things up there, up and down Anderson Avenue that they could enjoy themselves. And, of course, a lot, I think, little places to eat. Now, you know, I have too many places to eat. And that's a thing that you probably would miss about the area.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So then I wanted to ask, how has desegregation changed things in the area for you?
It changed for a lot of businesses we don't have like we did have, but it helped that people can go to places and buy or do some things, sit down and go to restrooms or whatever. Those things have helped for the better. It has helped, I guess, with the education of our children going to schools to have equal books and things like that. In some things, it kind of like knocked them out for the cultural things that if they want to do this together or something like that, I think we miss that part of it. But everything else, I would say, probably is going just fine.
Yeah.
With things, what it's happened. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I want to know, has anything about Fort Myers stayed the same from what you can remember?
Stayed the same. Well, the things I would say, blacks still living there, most of them. Of course, we know we got a lot to go over the Cape or Lehigh or, you know, mingling with that. Mm-hmm. But the black areas are about the same. Blacks will stay in those places for many, many years, and they don't move unless they've gotten real, real fortunate to, you know, get money for these big, big houses or condominiums. And as a school teacher, see, I can't tell you about that because I just stay in my little house where I got. We got it in the 70s, I think, and been there ever since. Mm. But a lot of the places out. But now, I can't, at the moment, since you asked me, if I had to think about it, maybe I could remember.
Yeah, no pressure with that question. Teresa said she's like, no, everything's changed.
Everything's
she's like,
changed.
I can't remember one thing that's
the same. Yeah, I don't remember. Like I say, many of us stay right in our little place, because I know my community, all of the neighbors are there, except, you know, ones who die out, they're ill or something, and they have to go to nursing home. But as a whole, there's that Dunbar section that everybody, if you're black, you're from the Dunbar section. And many times they talk in the newspaper, that's not Dunbar. This part is called something else. This part, you got different little sections of it that is called. Because up where the Franklin Park School, that section was called Franklin Park section or something. Then you have the metal something kind of close to where I am up there. Oh, and my section is called Fort Myers State. So you got different ones. But if anything happened, and if you were black and you get in the newspaper, it says a person from Dunbar. And many people get all mad. Hey, it wasn't from Dunbar. Dunbar is where a section over there from, what are those streets? But it's up there with the Recreation Center, somewhere up in that, say, and Stars Complex. That was known as, not for the Recreation Center, but it was like two or three blocks of something in there, right where the school is, tell you the truth. That was mostly a long time ago, the Dunbar section. But as Dunbar spread and go this way or that way, I mean, the blacks, yeah, people, we're still, if you're in that neighborhood, you're still, they still call it, that's Dunbar. and Paul Lawrence Dunbar, he never did come here, but we got his name with the school, with the different things that we have here. But we knew he was a famous person at the time, so they wanted the famous name, I guess, to name Dunbar. So we have Mr. Paul Lawrence Dunbar, and I think they don't have that name the way he wrote. Lawrence was L-A-U-R-E-N-C-E, and they have L-A-W-R-E-N-C-E and spelling it up there. But anyway, we know we know what's happening there. Was there anything else about this? Because I can't remember anything else being to say. A lot of things have changed, you know, for the good. But little things like that, we still have sections that are still still where they are.
And yeah,
bikes are still there. But of course, a lot have changed, and they left out to go other places too.
Mm-hmm. Now, I actually wasn't going to ask about this, but you reminded me, because you talked about, like, people, like, mingling over in Cape Coral and stuff like that. Was there ever any interest in the black community in buying land in Cape Coral?
For the ones who went, they had some money, and they'll say, oh, she's going over there to live with the whites, or he's going over there. They kind of treat them as the privileged area when you went over there, but... a lot of them stayed right over here.
Mm. I ask about that because I was reading an account of it was someone who worked for Gulf American, which was the company that sold
a lot of that. Mm-hmm.
And she said that whenever they had people come over or anyone from Dunbar or Safety Hill, yeah, she was older, she called it Safety Hill, come over to express interest in land, that the people would only take, like, they'd take them over to, like, mud plots or something.
Because they didn't want them to be there.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, that's why many of us kind of stay, and then they'll say, oh, Miss So-and-so had, oh, let her go right on. My husband, because he was in landscaping, that's where he did a lot of his business, and he would tell me, like I told you, he was a person that he'd like to get on your nerve and just see what was happening. Well, he was there, and they didn't like for him because he was black to be landscaping all those people yard. And so, oh, that boy, was, that man was something. He would say, he'd go and say, well, you want to work for me? He talked to him. And oh, they would get so hot. And I think one time they called the police on him and told him, check his license, see if he got license and be over here working. But that was that. But he worked over there for the longest part.
Hmm. All right. Well, that about exhausts my questions. Thank you so much for talking with us, Nina.
Well, I'm glad you were so comfortable and asking questions, and I enjoyed it. And I hope that will, you know, help you out some way, because I always say, I don't have nothing to tell anybody about. I've been down here with Black History, though, for ever since 93, when we kind of, like, opened it. The president was cast, and she left, and she got mad. She left. But I've been here, and Betty knows that you see talking. They have taken it, and they've done a nice job with Black History, and they always keep my name as historian, but I have done a lot with the things you see in the book, or gotten people to do the go out and interview people. We've done a lot of that. That's what you see in the transfer, and I keep calling Jacob Johnson or McCutcheon. Those people are the ones who really stayed here and knew a lot of the history, and if you can get something out of the lynching part, they would have been the people who were telling you about lynching and other valuable stuff that you would, you know, get something out of too. But I came and I got a lot of things from them because they lived here, but I've always been interested in history. so I just kind of stayed. And I come now, I look like I can't do nothing that I want to. Like this morning, I was supposed to be getting Betty a list so that they're going to be putting up some football, the athletes for Juneteenth when they have it. And so I was trying to get some history of what year this one started, like Deion Sanders went in 85, and then he went off and finished at the college in 89, and from there he was on the drafted by the football team and all. So I've been trying to do some of those so she can put some pictures up of these football players, and that's one thing they're going to be doing. Plus they're going to do others for Juneteenth, but that was one thing. But I didn't do too much today, so I'll go and I'll finish up some of my things over there before I go, because Betty was saying, well, what time are you going to go? I say, when I finish it. I don't know where that came from.